In this Climate Gen episode, I speak with Dr. René Van Westen about the recent research he published with colleagues looking at what it would take to cause the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, the AMOC, to pass through its tipping point. Interpretations of this research have been published in the media around the world and debated across social media. Here, René gets a chance to clarify the potential for catastrophic impacts that would indiscriminately devastate Europe, as well as many other regions in proximity to the Atlantic and beyond. If you want to read about how governments have consistently lied to get us into this mess, then make sure you order my book Cop Out from the link in the notes. In the next episode, I will be speaking with Dana R. Fisher, discussing her new book, Saving Ourselves, and what it will take to create the anthro shift, or social tipping point, required to change course for the better. If the collapsing AMOC is the answer, I will pass on that. Thank you to all subscribers, your support is always welcome. Extra episodes and episode previews will continue to be forthcoming. There is a huge influx of requests for interviews and climate and ecological stories out there to cover, and I'm totally overwhelmed. Thank you again for your interest, feedback, and support. René, it's great to speak to you. Thank you very much for taking the time at short notice as well.
Yeah, great.
In your modeling experiment, to sort of trigger the tipping point, if you like, you feed in extra fresh water from glaciers and Greenland. Are the quantities that you're feeding in, sort of, how do they compare to the actual of amounts of water loss estimated at the moment?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And definitely it's not very realistic if you compare it to what's going on at the moment. So the present day melt rate is substantially smaller than the amounts we put in. So we are also very frank about this point. But the main point of our paper was not to mimic a real scenario. It was just to trigger this AMOC tipping point. And that is, so in the end, when we find the AMOC tipping point, we pour in 80 times, so 80 times the melt rate of the present day melt rate of Greenland. So that is very large, very absurd values.
Okay.
And that's simply because the model is too stable.
In a previous interview, I interviewed Professor Jason Box, and he was talking about ice that's still on the raised bed of Greenland, but that's actually committed to be lost. What he was referring to as sort of zombie ice because it's going to come off. Did your study, I mean, I'm trying to get an idea of how these kinds of quantities that are committed, how they sort of feed into this, because if you're saying it's 80 times, well, maybe all of these things added together start to give us something close to that.
No, probably not. I think we won't get to that particular point. But the interesting point is that because these models have these climate model biases, if we are correct for them, we probably expect that the tipping point will be much more closer. So then we're not talking about 80 times, so maybe then only 10 times or 5 times. We cannot say anything about that because we are not sure how all these biases influence each other, because it's a very complex system. You can imagine that the atmosphere responds to that, sea ice, land ice. So it is therefore a very urgent effort to the modeling community to reduce these biases and push the AMOC in the real observed regime in these climate models.
And where you're talking about the complexity, you cite the Gulf Stream and also the Atlantic Ocean Circulation, is the other name, as the early warning signal. Can you just talk us through how that works and what the signal looks like if it was to tip?
Yes, so that's a really good question. So I would like to start with the mechanisms which govern, in the first place, AMOC weakening and AMOC tipping. So in our climate model simulation, we add a small freshwater perturbation in the North Atlantic Ocean. And what it actually does, it slightly changes the densities in the ocean, so the density gradients, and this results eventually in an AMOC weakening. But of course, the circulation still starts to turn over, and it transports salinity from the equator to Greenland, to the more northern latitudes. So this partly compensates this freshwater input. However, when you're very close to this tipping point, you're adding more fresh water, the AMOC decreases in strength, but then you are not transporting that many salt quantities again to the north, which then amplifies this initial weakening or this initial freshwater perturbation. So this perturbation grows, which then further weakens the AMOC. You're getting less salinity transport, which further amplifies that. So it goes on and on and on. And this measure for this feedback loop, you can actually determine that at the most southern boundary of the Atlantic Ocean. So that is at 31st south. So that is between the tip of Africa and the South American continent. And what we actually measure there is how much fresh water is flowing into the ocean, into the Atlantic Ocean, or is exported out of the Atlantic Ocean. And this is called the FOV value. Maybe you've seen the paper, I'm not sure, or whether it actually says something. But the main point of this quantity is when its value is negative, these kind of freshwater anomalies are amplified in the system. So that destabilizes the AMOC. And when it is getting more and more negative, it strongly de-amplifies the AMOC system. And what we are currently seeing in the reanalysis products we analyze is that this value is getting more negative, and that implies that we are moving towards the tipping point.
Can we talk about the impacts then? Just how
Sure.
drastic would it be for any specific regions that you can cite, or for the
Yeah,
planet?
yeah,
Sorry, regions
yeah.
within the world or the planet as a whole?
Yeah, so we were really surprised by the impacts, and in particular the rate of change. So previous studies already have shown what would happen if the AMOC collapses, and they already sketch a very clear picture, and we confirmed those results as well. But the rate of change, that is also something new. But first, just zoom out and what would happen. So the ocean circulation in the Atlantic Ocean effectively transports salinity and heat from the southern hemisphere to the northern hemisphere. And when this stops, all this heat will pile up in the southern hemisphere, and the northern hemisphere doesn't receive this heat anymore. So you see this typical seesaw pattern. So the northern hemisphere cools while the southern hemisphere warms. And meanwhile, you also see some shifts in your precipitation pattern because it's also connected to the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. And the circulation also influences the sea level height in the Atlantic Ocean in specific. And you're also getting some sea level rise in the Atlantic Ocean up to 1 meter. And then you also ask about, okay, which region is most influenced under such a collapse? And that is the European continent. And the European continent is really influenced, for example, by the warm Gulf Stream. And without its heat, European climate cools down by about 5 to 10 degrees Celsius. And some regions even cool down by almost 20 degrees Celsius. So that is quite absurd. And yeah, to find this kind of very sharp and stark temperature contrasts.
And obviously, with all the pressures around the world as it is, this—I mean, Europe regards itself as fairly stable. We would be talking about some major disruption.
Exactly.
And to be clear, I mean, there are quite a lot of eminent scientists responding to the media around all of this, saying, you know, this is a risk, but it's not a forecast. It's
No.
and how would you characterize the risk in response to your own work?
I think the scientists that they provide indeed a correct image of our study is that indeed we don't have this forecast. We only can say that there is a potential future in which that can happen. It's now also confirmed by our study. And I agree with other scientists as well. This is only one study. So I hope that other modeling groups will also do the same experiment, and hopefully they can verify our results. That would be a very nice contribution. But our study cannot say anything about any risks. Like this is going to happen, for example, by 2030, 2040. We cannot say anything about that. What we can say, however, is that we are moving towards this tipping point, and this enhances the risk of undergoing such a transition. It is getting more unlikely, but how more likely, we cannot say that. And of course, that is the $1 million question. If we could answer that, like by this year, it would collapse. Of course, that would help, and we need to explore this more.
Okay, and my sort of rational response to listening to you and seeing this research is that we need to sort of organize multilaterally and take appropriate action. And that would be done through political channels where structural action is possible. And what sort of response have you had from the policy sphere so far?
And so far, I didn't see any policymakers or response to that, or I didn't see anything on Twitter. So maybe you've seen some of some findings from policymakers.
No, but that was kind of the point, really. I just think it's amazing that you're highlighting these risks. You're not saying it's going to happen. You're saying that we're edging towards this. All current fossil fuel policies are making it worse. We need to change. And it's a frightening prospect for all the reasons that you said. And it sounds like, as well, a too big a shock for many people to survive. And it could be indiscriminate. Basically, you're saying Europe, but I mean, the knock-on effects will be absolutely catastrophic. As you're looking at the cause and effect out of all your research here, how confident do you feel that we can actually avert these kinds of colossal, deadly impacts, whether it's in our lifetimes or even the next generation?
So I think it will be so also during the previous COP meetings which have been done in the past, there was also this very important report coming up, and they mentioned like the closing window. So there is still an opportunity to transit to a green and sustainable world, which stays far below 1.5 degrees Celsius. But the window is closing very, very rapidly, and we need to take action now. And then, if you look at how current policies are made and that they're still supporting a lot of our fossil fuel emissions, it is not in line with, for example, 1.5 degrees Celsius nor 2 degrees Celsius warming with respect to pre-industrial period. So I think there is still time, but time is running out very soon. So we need to take actions now. And such actions will definitely prevent further destabilizing the Earth climate system. So therefore, I think we need to really take climate change way more serious than it's already been mentioned by a lot of scientists.
But the scientists, I mean, you guys have kind of done your we know what the problem is, and we're going
We
and spinning.
already know it since the 90s, 1990s,
Yeah,
or before that. So it's
exactly.
all clear.
And so we've had decades and decades of absolute failure, and now we go to COP28, and we're going to COP29, which is an even bigger joke. And I mean, these are like death policies they're coming up with because they're just saying, yeah, by the way, we're expanding our gas production and oil production. And therefore, that makes what you're saying is a big certainty if we carry on doing what we're doing, an inevitability based on those points. And they're not going to change course. We kind of know that, don't we?
I hope that I am wrong in this issue, and that we can avert such a potential scenario of a future AMOC collapse. But continuing on this road, it will become more likely. And I hope that also with these results, it provides much more evidence, hey, this is a potential future scenario. If you want to avert it, you need to take action now. And before our publication, people could still argue, okay, maybe this is still a dreamlike scenario. There was still discussion among the community whether this was really possible, such a climate model simulation. So this is a very important piece to the puzzle, and therefore it is very good that it is now out there, and that we can inform policymakers much more carefully and also with more information what would happen if we are continuing down this road.
Okay. And just to end on, you've just said about informing policymakers. We've just talked about that. And they're not doing anything, but you are doing a good job actually in informing the public because this has gone right across the media. And I know some scientists are like, wait, everybody calm down. It's not the end of the world just yet. But really, the public do need to know and the public do need to respond. And if this impact kicks in, it's not going to be one you can easily bounce back from.
No,
So
exactly.
Is that part of your mission here with the great communications that you've done?
Yeah, I'm really pledging for a lot of outreach with the general public because then they are also familiar with this point that there's also a potential future, which this can happen. And I think it's very important to inform the public well. Also, of course, not to scare them. I think that's also very important because maybe you've seen the headlines that in 2025 the AMOC will collapse and this will happen. That's clearly not the case, and that's also not how we communicated our results with the media. But of course, people would like to get some more readers to their news stories. And therefore, I'm really glad that you asked me for this interview that we can discuss a little bit more on this issue.
Well, it's been really, really interesting. And yeah, thank you very much for the work. And yeah, but I think you've done the right thing. I think people need to understand that we need serious fossil fuel non-proliferation treaties to get this just out of, to change direction. So thank you very
Exactly.
much.